Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, Eddie's back, baby. Eddie's back.
What's
the
going on?
Birthday boy.
That was a while ago.
Well, not to me.
Two weeks ago.
You know the funny thing is, Eddie, I was looking at the Facebook.
Yeah.
At the Facebook.
The Facebook.
And I saw Eddie Pence's birthday, and I'm like, I gotta just post this real quick. I literally got a phone call from the hotel confirming Summerfest. Got a phone call from the airline about my drummer's flight from Minnesota because he was flying on a different flight. And I realized, like, a week later, I was like, I totally didn't post.
And I was like, and I was crushed for a whole week.
No, I know
I
you were.
Sat in my
and
room
you know what? But I'll tell you. I felt kind of like a jackass. I was like, dude, I totally missed my co-host's birthday. I got my tail in between my legs. And I was telling Bonnie, I was like, you know, maybe I should send him a text later. And she was like, no, send it to him now, even though you totally missed his birthday. I was like, so happy birthday, dude.
Thanks.
How'd you spend it?
I was back east. I was at my folks back east.
Did you get a birthday cake?
Yeah, we did. I got the, I forget what it's called. You get it at Cold Stone. It's like a chocolate ice cream cake.
Was it good?
Oh, it's amazing.
Dude.
It's the most amazing ice cream cake.
And you're not like really that crazy about sweets.
I like chocolate.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
It's a great chocolate ice cream cake.
Really?
It's Cold Stone.
All right.
It's Midnight something. I forget what it's called.
Midnight. Let's call it Midnight Madness.
So good. It might be that. I don't even know. It's so good.
Well, dude, how old did you turn, if you don't want me asking?
I'm old.
Are you 44?
Exactly.
Ah, see? I was wondering. I was going to say 45, exactly. 44, 43, somewhere in that range. Well, happy birthday, dude. We're happy you're back. You had a good time back east?
Yeah, it was okay.
Good weather?
No, it's hot as shit.
Like, it's humid. It's really humid, though, right?
Yeah, it's like 86, but the humidity makes for like 105.
Do you see a lot of fireflies?
No.
What? This firefly weather, though.
It was too hot.
Too hot
it
for
like
fireflies?
Too humid for fire. It was too humid for anything to move.
That's
it was brutally
kind of how it's been in the last couple days.
So
it was 85 degrees in my house with the AC on.
Yeah, well, as soon as I got home, I cranked the AC, and it took 12 hours to cool the house down. And I live in an apartment. It's like a tiny little apartment.
You know what? If you don't believe in global warming, I just don't want to have the discussion with you. It's ridiculous. It's just unbelievable. But yes, we're happy you're back. Man, I had a crazy.
Oh, yeah, Summerfest, right?
Dude, it was the gnarliest Summerfest experience for us. I'm going to just tell you in a couple minutes.
Didn't you have a gnarly one last year, too?
No, last one was easy. Like, the last 11 years at Summerfest have actually been pretty fun, pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of adrenaline just like getting to the festival, getting the band there, sound checking, and it's tight. You know, it's tight on time. But this year was ridiculous. Four of the members, including myself, we flew at 6 in the morning on the 4th of July.
Brutal.
Which is brutal. And we get to Milwaukee, no problem. Check in the hotel, no problem. I made reservations at one of our favorite restaurants, no problem. Everything's golden. My drummer went to visit his family in, you know, the days before Summerfest, so he flew from Minnesota. He said, flight's on time, guys. I'll see you guys in a little bit, okay? I'm like, great.
There was a bunch of storms in, like, Michigan.
Is
that what fucked you up?
Yes.
Because it fucked us up flying back.
Dude, okay, so he was supposed to arrive at 4:30. Yeah. We're supposed to play at 6. We're 15 minutes away from the airport. So I had two cars. I told the guys, I said, you guys go set up the stage, take all the gear. The sound production crew already knows that this is going to happen, and I'm going to go pick up Adam. Get to the airport at 4 o'clock. He's supposed to arrive at 4:30. He's like, man, there's a half an hour delay. I'm like, okay, 5 o'clock. I can still get us there. It'll be tight, but it's going to be crazy. He ends up landing at 5:50. We're supposed to be on the stage and performing at 6, which means we have to get to a parking lot, get our gear and ourselves shuttled to the stage. I had to call production. I said, listen, my drummer is coming super late. There's all kinds of rainstorms. I said, okay, we're going to give you like a police escort into the backstage area. Just go to a different address. So I pick him up. I had his dinner waiting. He was like stuffing his face with a burrito. We jetted to the concert. We had a police escort and a stage escort into the grounds, into the backstage area. We set all of our stuff up. It's chaotic. It's crazy. We're just about to start, and the whole production crew says, glad you made it. We need to stop because there's going to be a huge rainstorm coming in.
So you didn't even have to play anyway.
So we didn't have to play right then. So we waited. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's wait 10, 15 minutes. It rains so hard. People are running from the stands. I'm like, this is crazy. This is obnoxious. I'm like, all right, just make the most of it. Hopefully it'll clear up. It clears up. They're like, okay, band ready? We're ready. We're supposed to play an hour and a half. I'm like, let's go, guys. Let's do this. I didn't get a chance to check my gear. Now, we have all of our gear set up. When the rainstorm came, sound crew unplugged everything because they shut down all the electricity.
Yeah.
Fine. So if I had 5 plugs into my pedal board, sound crew would unplug all 5, but for some reason, maybe they did it in a rush, they plugged 3 of those plugs back in without me knowing. And it's like some of the stuff works. So I'm like, great, great, let's just go play. So we start playing. We're gunning through our set. My guitar's like crazy out of tune. I'm like tuning it in the middle of the first song, still just kind of like trying to get through
everything. Why was the guitar out of tune?
Because of the humidity. Yeah. And I think one of the stagehands may have tried tuning it, and it's in a weird tuning, so...
Why would a stagehand try to tune your
because
guitar?
Because they just get involved in stuff sometimes that they shouldn't, you know? But, so anyways, we end up, like, right as Ray's taking a solo, I'm tuned up, and I'm good to go, and everything's cool, and we start going into the next couple tunes, and I start... to, you know, just about to get to a guitar solo, I push my little overdrive pedal. Nothing. Overdrive pedal is off. So in the middle of my guitar solo, I'm playing guitar solo, trying to turn the amp up with my other hand, playing one-handed, and just getting through it, which is crazy enough. And then as I'm playing guitar solo, I look up, and there's giant bolts of lightning flashing right in front of the stage, and we're on a giant metal stage. So I'm just like, this is crazy. Okay, just keep playing. We ended up playing 45 minutes, and then at the end of our song, right around 42 minutes, the stage manager comes. He's like, you got one more, and then we're going to be hit super hard, so make it short. So we ended up, we played a bunch of original stuff. We quoted Clapton, Change the World, and then we did a funk tune, and then we ended the show with Tom Petty, I Won't Back Down. As the eye of the storm is approaching, I'm singing I Won't Back Down. I'm like, this is crazy. Lightning bolts flashing. People starting to just like get out of the way because they can see the storm is coming and rain is coming.
How many people were there?
I don't even know. It was not... Usually the stage is meant for 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. Because of the rain, there was maybe 500 people.
Oh, really?
I mean, it just wasn't what Summerfest have been in the past for us, which was still cool. I mean, yeah. We still played, but we had to cut our set super short, and then it rained so hard. It was kind of ridiculous. I was like, I've never even seen a storm like this in the summer, you know, because I'm used to LA weather. So the cool thing was Isaac from The Fray, who we were opening for, came out, took pictures with people who were standing in the rain, and it just made me respect him so much more. And I got to hang with him a bunch, and we just talked about music and writing and stuff. But it was a very deflating gig to like have months of planning. Everything was dialed, everything was ironed out, and just had Mother Nature just kind of say, you know, those plans you made,
yeah,
we're just gonna stomp
them
a little bit.
That sucks.
But it was very fun to just be able to play because they told us that Flock of Seagulls had set up and they were one of the headliners on one of the stages. They played 2 songs and then it was Torrential Downpour.
Yeah, I mean, imagine the poor guys that put the festival on, how right. like miserable they are. I mean, they planned that thing for a year.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like...
They start planning the next one right now.
And you know what I was telling the band? I was like, you know, we've had... This was our 12th year and it was amazing that we had 12 years without that. So we were due... You know what I mean? So it was, if we had to have it for the show with The Fray, yeah. It's fine. Hopefully next year it'll be it'll be all good. But it was nuts. And I was just like, my bass player, we came home from the airport, and he's like, this is one of those gigs that just like tests your spirit as a musician. I'm like, don't I know it? You know, so it's tough because that was just our last gig. So I'm like, now I need to make sure the next gig is over the top. But happy to be home. Happy you're home safe.
Back in
I think LA. Our guests just arrived. Susie Kim, Damian Lichtenstein.
Stein.
Damn.
Frankenstein.
Stein. I should have known that. We're here to talk about the new filmmakers of Los Angeles, huh?
New filmmakers of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Bring it.
So talk to me about this organization. I think it's such a novel idea, and especially with so many grassroots directors and filmmakers and producers, you have this organization that's showcasing, it's putting a spotlight on kind of new stories and new ideas. Susie, just tell us a little bit about this organization and what it's about.
Well, New Filmmakers Los Angeles started about 10, 11 years ago. And it started as a film festival, but originally started in New York, I want to say about 20 years ago. And I met up with the founder in New York. And we started talking about it. And what was great about it is they spread out the programming throughout the year. So it's not just one event and one time. It's
right.
Like constant showcasing, access to artists, community.
So it's not like a set date of a festival, like mm-mm. 4 or 5 days. It's
yeah.
just ongoing.
Which can be very competitive, you know, especially
yeah.
for emerging
right.
filmmakers and independent filmmakers. So we felt that at that time, Larry LeBeau, who's the executive director, we're the co-founders. And we just felt like, you know, this is something we need to do in L.A., and so I was the outreach director of the A+D Architecture Design Museum. And I invited him over, the founder in New York, and I said, let's launch it over here. And we just started very humbly.
And so did you like have an experience in New York with the organization that made you want to start?
I didn't. Larry did.
Okay.
And I met Larry when he first moved to Los Angeles, and he started telling me about it. And I was like, oh, let's make something happen here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it started very small and humbly, and it's just now grown into this huge.
Well, you're in the right
animal.
City, right?
We are definitely in the right city for new filmmakers. I think that, Susie approached me about, being a co-founding member of the board about almost 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as a filmmaker and also being someone that's deeply rooted in the emerging voices of new filmmakers from around the world, I thought that this was an extraordinary opportunity for me to both bring whatever wisdom I gained over my career, as well as to constantly learn and constantly be inspired. New Filmmakers did start humbly and has grown into a world-class organization and monthly film festival. And I think that's one of the critical things to really understand about New Filmmakers is that it is a monthly festival, and it's one of the only monthly festivals in the world, and puts on extraordinary events throughout the year, and is partnered with everyone from the Motion Picture Academy to
the studios, educational partners, all the film schools.
What about the guilds?
The guilds also, SAG.
I'm Senior Leadership Council of the Directors Guild of America, so
okay.
I could say I represent that voice in New Filmmakers, even though we're not directly affiliated with the DGA. But it's the same concept. The DGA is an extraordinary organization that is committed to supporting global voices in cinema.
Mm-hmm. What's awesome about this, it's like, you know, I play the Sundance Film Festival every year, and that has become super commercial. The Sundance Institute has become, it started out super grassroots, like showcasing mm-hmm. storytellers that, you know, may not have the spotlight or the showcase or the voice, you know, to kind of share their stories on that major, medium. But now it's become so commercial. You have every company sponsoring every booth, every kind of, you know, party. It's,
I mean, that's what happens
yeah.
when things start getting more popular
right.
and recognized.
Right.
But I love Sundance because even though the festival itself tends to be, you know, kind of a bigger, brighter token, they have such great support and initiatives for, you know, filmmakers and writers and creatives. So the DNA still exists in the other programs that they have, which
but
I really
appreciate. But I mean, there are so many filmmakers that. They just deserve the chance, you know? And they're making great stuff, so it's, like, amazing that you're now kind of putting this together and making a movement, you know, for new directors, new producers, anybody that's kind of making something happen, making it a voice.
Right. Well, with new filmmakers, at least for me personally, I think it was important to have that structure so it was accessible for everybody. And I think it was maybe 7 years ago, Larry and I went on this really active campaign to start reaching out to international filmmakers and letting them know about the organization. We met with consulates, cultural centers, different groups.
That's awesome.
And it was maybe about a 4 or 5 month campaign. We just like met with hundreds of people. But the idea was just to let them know that they can kind of share what we're doing with new filmmakers, and it would let their independent filmmakers that maybe didn't have the means to be able to premiere or, you know, showcase in the U.S. or Hollywood for that matter. And we're like, you know, just let them know we're here. We'll be that bridge. And over the years, it's built up, and now we have such a robust community of international filmmakers and relationships that have grown really strong, and that's led into our diversity program in focus. So each month we have 3 programs, and one of those programs are dedicated to a different diversity group. So we've been doing that, I want to say, maybe about 4 years. And now, this year, we have the Academy. They're one of our presenting partners for the Latino program.
That's awesome.
We also have got so many incredible supporters. Sony, we did a whole diversity program on the studio with them. We work with also Fox,
HBO,
and it's just really grown and helped us shape. And, you know, we're talking about planning earlier with your story. And what was great, I think, about new filmmakers is since we didn't have the stress of building it out or with a plan, we just kind of navigated and listened to the audience, the community.
What people want.
What people wanted. And we were able to have the flexibility to shape the organization and our program based on our community. It was really crowdsourced and driven that way.
And New Filmmakers is a nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not like a proverbial commercial dog in the fight.
Right.
You know, it's really about how can we reach out to not just the local but the global community and bring people together and form relationships and bonds. And I think one of the things that we're consistently acknowledged for by filmmakers is how much support they feel from us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I also want to mention how much support we get from the city of L.A.
Oh, yeah, no. The city council, Mayor Garcetti, has been a lot.
That's awesome.
No, we actually do a partnered competition, which is with the city of Los Angeles. We have a lot of great supporters, and it's a competition called On Location, and basically it invites different content creators to come in and do like a 1 minute or 2 minute or less piece about Los Angeles.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's a good idea.
Yeah, and we've been doing it, I think we're in our 8th year, and it's grown into such a really fantastic.
And what's the turnaround for them to be able to do that?
The call for submissions, I think it's about 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah, 4 to 6 months. And then we do a huge, big premiere event at Hollywood Center Studios in one of their sound stages.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
which a lot of filmmakers don't always get the chance to have their works premiered there, so that's just
And our festival events each month, we have a beautiful studio downtown Los Angeles at the South Park Center, and we have our own dedicated theater. It's 500 seats, and it's like a mini red carpet every month. that comes
awesome.
In.
How many films do you display, like in like
over
one event?
A year? I would say maybe about 140 films. We do about 18 programs a year. Not only our festival every month, but we also do on location. We have different partnerships with different festivals. We're very collaborative, so we work on different organizations that align with the same mission that we can work together on.
We is this for shorts and features?
We do features, documentaries, new media,
fantastic.
Music videos. I mean,
amazing.
And it grows each year because, you know, the industry is constantly shifting. It's moving like that.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? So we try to adapt the organization as best as we can. I mean, keep in mind, we're a nonprofit, very limited means and funding.
Right.
Hopefully everyone out there can support us.
Yeah.
Do you have like an online presence where you went after they at the festival or the event? You go
it's
online and then...
It's a machine,
yeah. It's a literal machine.
It's a machine. It's like a factory. We're like, we do the thing, we press release, we do the red carpet, we actively engage getting partners. And because each month is such a specific focus, whether it's the diversity or the way we program and curate, then we can really kind of activate different partners, community partners, that makes
it's
sense.
It's like a reach out almost, like a reach out program.
Yeah, it's so much work. Luckily, we have an amazing staff working with us. We have Andrew Acevedo. He's our outreach director. And we got this new programming director, Boyana. She's great. She came from the Newport Film Festival, I believe. And then we have a really, active and wonderful board of directors also that are constantly engaged. And you see the success and, just how much we impact all of these filmmakers.
Right.
And given the opportunities with our different partnerships, especially with the studios, they come to us for talent now.
That's amazing.
Because our programming is, it's amazing.
It's like quality control, that's everything.
Yeah, no, that was really the most important thing for us out of anything was to make sure that the content and the quality of it was consistent. Every month.
That's awesome.
And, we made a few mistakes.
Well, walk me through this for a second. Let's say I'm a filmmaker from Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and I just made this great independent film, and I don't know how to be a part of this organization. What are the steps I should take to kind of investigate or be a part of this?
Well, it's, submission-based, and we have a programming committee that judge and review all the films, and it goes through, certain stages and cycles. So once your film is shortlisted, then you get kind of notified, and usually it's a phone call from one of us, and we conduct on-phone interviews with the filmmakers just to make sure, because we want to make sure that it's somebody that we can stand behind as an organization, because once you get accepted into the program,
your name on it.
Yeah, exactly. And once you become accepted into the program, you become an alumni, and then that's when all the other professional development opportunities, education, and support can be offered to you. But we have to be able to really kind of stand behind a person. I mean, there's some great projects out there that we've received, but the creators are not interested in having sustainable careers as filmmakers.
Right.
They're doing it, because of one reason or another. And there is a platform for that, right?
Right.
But for what we're looking for specifically is really filmmakers that want careers. And we want to bridge them with our different partners in the industry. Even Damien, he was so instrumental in providing prizes and support and mentorship with these emerging filmmakers. And now the first one he did, Varda, she's now on our board of directors. She had a short film that won the competition I was telling you about with the partnership with LA. And his prize helped her with a documentary feature, Big Voice, that ended up winning all these awards. And
that's
it's
fantastic.
Just, and we have a lot of stories like that over the past 10 years. We have a huge community of talent that comes through the organization, and they are killing it in the industry.
And can a film be submitted through Film Freeway or any of those?
Yeah, we're It could be changing. I'm not so involved in the programming cycle anymore. But there's some standard submission platforms.
That, when you know it's growing, when the previous programmer is no longer really that involved.
Hey, I did it for 10 years, right. Watching thousands of films.
She did a great job. I think that that's also an important thing to note is that, everyone on staff at New Filmmakers and the interns and everyone there, it is a massive labor of love and passion for what they're doing, because no one is getting paid what I would consider a livable wage in, you know, this city for sure. And yet they're in there working 100-hour weeks. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and the event, the level of event that is put on, you know, multiple events every month. And what I'm calling red carpet level events, and the events are so well run by Susie and Larry and the rest of the staff that the Academy took notice. The BAFTA, British Academy Awards, took notice. Everyone started taking notice of, like, wow, this is a super pro crew. And we want to partner with and be a part of it. And I think that that's really important. And also, following up on what she said about Varda, this is a perfect example, and I'm going to reiterate it, is that here you have a filmmaker that came in with a short submitted. It was great. It was a great piece of filmmaking. And not only that, a passionate voice for cinema and a passionate woman's voice in cinema and everything that is around that, and her commitment to women filmmakers. And she won a production award from my company, and that has really supported her in this documentary. And that then led her to being one of the biggest voices on our board. So it's like this is a very open paradigm for filmmakers, and it really doesn't matter where you're coming from in the filmmaking cycle. You can be a director, you can be a producer, you can be a cinematographer, a writer, or a composer, you could be an actor. As long as you're someone that's committed to filmmaking and what it means to express the gifts and the artistry within yourself and to share that with the community, then you have a home. And that's, I think, part of speaking, I'm going to speak to the future of New Filmmakers, is part of our commitment in the future is to creating an actual home, a hub. A place like, you know, we could call the Sundance Institute, but a New Filmmakers, you know, a community center hub where filmmakers and all people from all creative areas within the realm of filmmaking have a seat at the table and can share ideas and support each other in the realization of their dreams. And you're a musician, you're a guitar player, right? So amongst whatever other hyphenate you are. I think in...
Superhero.
Superhero is very important. All filmmakers at some fundamental level are hyphenates, you know, where whether you're a writer, producer, and director, or an actor and a writer, but we're all also marketeers. We all have to market ourselves. And like a guitar player cannot not play the guitar. It's that you have to play it. It's just a part of who you are. Then that is really what New Filmmakers is about, and it's what Susie was also talking about the commitment that you have to have as a filmmaker. You might have produced an extraordinary piece of work, as she said, but there's no commitment you have behind the support of that work into the world. It's just like you hope it goes great, but it was like a one-off for you.
It's such a long process. It really is.
It takes
I love
forever.
This because the market is so saturated with so much, and you guys are just basically allowing true filmmakers, true artists, a path to kind of just be a part of a community. I mean, that is extraordinary. I love that.
I mean, luckily, we are in Los Angeles, and there's so many organizations and platforms and places where you can really, as a filmmaker or a creator, can find, you know, support and resources. I think really what stands out about new filmmakers is because of the sheer volume and also the selection standards that we have, that really has helped us create, you know, just, what's the right word? Just a safety net
right.
for everybody. They can trust us. They right. trust the brand. They trust the organization. I mean, that's what we've been building up for the past 10 years.
And what's the ratio between, like, submissions and what you accept?
I would say 7%.
Hmm.
It's competitive. Yeah. I mean, you.
Well, you can make a movie on your iPhone now. So, like,
right.
And I love that. I've taken a lot of risks as a programmer to select projects that maybe aren't commercially viable and are challenging for an audience. But I appreciate so much to see somebody deal and work with very little and be able to create something that is engaging and telling a story and yep. thoughtful.
My friend and I were actually shooting the film on this iPhone right here, and we're in our eighth month of shooting it, just whenever we have free time,
mm-hmm.
and we can get together and have people available for the scene. It's just like that's filmmaking now.
Yes.
You know, you just make it when you can, you can do it with what you got. It's crazy.
I mean, there's also, because it's so easy, you get a lot of films where I'm like,
oh, yeah.
can't, you know, there's disrespect to the craft.
Right.
Well, that's the downside of the accessibility.
And I'm like, how, like, it's
okay,
so...
tell the truth. Do you watch it all the way through, or do you stop 5 minutes?
You can't watch it all the way through.
I, for a long time, my boyfriend hated me
right.
for it. He's like, why are you watching it? Turn it off. You know it's going to be bad. You can tell in the first 10 minutes. I was like... But
Wait.
Something can happen.
Yeah, right.
I always, like, I try to see every... And I think most of us are like that, you know, in our team.
Well, that's the downside of the digital. Like, before, like, 20 years ago, when you had to shoot on film, you had to want to make a film. You had to commit just the financial end of it.
And also, you wouldn't go blindly or recklessly because it was such an expensive
And you wouldn't just
mistake.
Let it run because you're burning money as the thing rolls around.
I mean, one of the great quotes... And I don't even know who to attribute it to, but that I heard.
You can attribute it to Eddie.
Yeah, I'll take it. Eddie,
I'll take
it's yours.
Thank you.
Was that the advent of the digital word processor did not create a deluge of extraordinary writers.
Right.
Okay, so there was a time when you had to sit there at the typewriter,
right.
and if you wanted to pound out a 500-page novel... You know, key by key, it took something. The same with scripts. Can we swear on this program?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so... Okay, great. So I don't do it so much anymore, but I used to teach programs, and one of my little programs I taught was called Shut the Fuck Up and Shoot. Because I would say the exact same thing. When I started making film, it cost... almost $500 to get 10 minutes
yeah.
out, let alone the 60mm ARRI-SR camera you're using or your Bell & Howell.
And then to sync up sound.
And to sync the sound up
ridiculous.
And cutting on, flatbed Steenbecks and Moviolas. Thank God I got to do all that stuff because it taught me an appreciation for the craft that I do think is missing in a large grouping of people who just, want to create content. And there's nothing wrong with that content. There's an enormous world of YouTubes and whatever mm-hmm. for content. And there's even a whole universe of if your content isn't shitty enough, it's not real enough, so we don't accept it in this particular venue. But over here in New Filmmakers, we are talking about craft. We are talking about a commitment to playing. There's a great guitarist named Robert Fripp. Right?
Yeah.
I got to back in my heyday of directing music videos and things like that.
I saw your credits. You had
Sting,
Eric Clapton.
A bunch of people.
You know, Clapton's my favorite, by the way.
He's an extraordinary human being.
For a lot of people.
Yeah.
And man, did he go through it himself
right.
in so many ways. But those individuals had a commitment to their craft. Robert Fripp told me that he practices guitar 6 hours a day, every day.
Wow.
6 hours a day, every day. And Clapton is probably somewhere in the same arena. So the part of the programming is not just something extraordinary, and that the craft level is there, but also that there is a commitment to artistry present. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always, you know, look, everything in the, we'll call it the movie world, movie and television, because I'm also do a lot of work in gaming, but everything in that world is story driven. Everything's driven by story. And story is ultimately just what your characters do, right? So that's right. And that's even plot. So it's, story is driven by character. So when we think of shows and movies we love, we tend to fall in love with characters, and we want to see what's going to happen to that character inside that story, and that's often the hook. I also want to say from a filmmaking perspective, since we're on talk radio, that the one of the most critical things that you have to learn is that sound can be 70% of your picture.
Hmm.
So if your guitar, as you were saying earlier, is out of tune,
right,
then that throws the whole performance and the whole song off. You've got to keep tuning that guitar. If the sound within the film you're watching, I've seen brilliant images
and
with
the
terrific
terrible.
Sound,
yes.
And I'm like, I turn it off.
Yeah,
I'm out. And it's like saying, how long can I listen to a staticky radio station,
right,
even if it's a song I love? A very short period of time. So there are critical things to understand and grow as a filmmaker, and I think that that's why we have, you know, an entire world where we're honoring sound, and we're honoring editorial, and we're honoring all the things that are a part of the pathway and the craft of filmmaking. And music is a huge part. You know, if you ever want to see the impact of music, watch Star Wars with the sound turned off.
Right.
It's a bunch of models on
see
strings.
That, Eddie? You see that, Eddie?
Have you ever seen on YouTube the throne room scene? Or the same thing when they get the medals and they're walking down the long hallway and you take off the soundtrack?
And it's just boring.
It's amazing. You just hear footsteps. It's amazing.
Sound is everything.
It's amazing.
So I also think sound mixing.
It's also an afterthought on every movie set.
Right.
I know.
It's like, oh, we'll fix that later.
That and also my pet peeve is performances, acting.
Hmm.
I feel like I've seen a lot of pictures. You can tell the director has put in a lot in the production, the camera, every component. But the lack of connection with that director and the performers, that's very common. And that'll kill a picture for me.
A lot of that is work ethic, though, too. You know, it's like sometimes it's the performers, sometimes it's what the director's bringing out of the performers.
I think it's
the focus.
Understanding the language, because actors have a certain language that they speak. And directors, if you're a director out there, learn acting.
Yeah,
just take an acting course. That's what I recommend, number one.
Well, I went to Chapman for film school.
Oh, you did? That's
and,
a great school.
It's
They're actually
school.
One of our partners, too.
I was a second year in the MFA program, and so I was a guinea pig. So the program is much better now than when I went to it. But we had to take an acting class as MFA students, and it helps you. I mean, I'm an actor anyway, but like other people who were doing their student films, like you could see they were so focused on the technical aspect of directing, like setting up the shot, not crossing the line, and all this, and without putting any thought or any energy into the performance.
Yeah, just hit your mark.
Just
say
these lines.
Right.
Let me just make
sure
I get this shot, because they're not even paying attention to the performance.
And I understand that. It's a lot of responsibility and detail. I mean, you're creating a huge machine. There's so many different details. And being a director, you have to be able to really be open and experienced. I mean, that's a great thing about the accessibility. To be able to create content is that you can practice and really fine tune and develop and get the experience.
Look, what a lot of big directors know, I'll call them big, meaning successful. I don't even know if I put myself in that category.
You're pretty close.
I've just done a lot. But casting, we often say, is 90% of the battle. Because there's at the pro level, at the, you know, we can call it the pro, super pro, there's semi pro, whatever. But at that triple A list pro level, there's pretty much a guarantee of a beautiful usable image and great sound. you know, and all the elements that come in from production design to lighting to set dressing to wardrobe and costume. You know, the fastest window into a character happens to be wardrobe. That's why they such a big Academy Award. Because, and it's very simple. You know, if you walk into the room and your shorts and your green Brian Wilson shirt and you know, and your cool badass necklace, you know, like that, there's a particular thought process I have right away. Cool, chilled, relaxed guy, probably
superhero.
Superhero. But if you walk in a full military uniform,
right,
and you're upright and rigid, like I have an instant other thought process on you. So wardrobe is critical. The second fastest access into story and character is dialogue, you know, what the character says. And so in the world of storytelling, this relationship we're talking about between the director and the actor and the director and the crew is critical. I think the best directors have a very strong understanding of their craft. They know what lenses are. They know what a lens does. Why does this 18-millimeter lens produce a, which is Spielberg's favorite lens, produce a completely different image than like this 85 or 110-millimeter lens, which might be Michael Mann's favorite lens, right? There's it has an impact on story and character and what you're saying. And you need to understand that. And you need to, as a director, be able to articulate that to all of the department heads and creatives on your set. But once you've done that, your real job is the ability to elicit powerful, emotional, engaging right. performance from your cast. And that becomes super critical because when you come down to the editorial process, your editor and you, perhaps you as the director and editor, but for sure is mining for gold. And I've seen many, by the way, big hat off to some of the great editors out there. I'm tipping my hat to Miklos Wright right now.
Eddie's an editor himself.
I do everything.
Extraordinary saves often come with editors who
so
take
true.
A complete disaster of performance and directorial on that day. It's happened to me. I've been like, wow, I was completely off my game. But the editors are able to craft something because there was enough there to do it. So it's a craft. And New Filmmakers ultimately is committed to that craft and all the aspects of that craft. And that's why I think New Filmmakers also, it's organic, it's real, it's not, you know, it's probable at our growth rate that at some point will become commercialized.
Right.
It's a problem.
It will. You will have a Doritos booth at some point.
Yeah. Not if I have anything to do with it.
We do already have some sponsors, but the point there is that it's really community, and when you're there, you know, you have the sense of like I'm you and you're me.
Right.
We have the same the same issue that a woman filmmaker in Iran has. Except some other issues, right? Like suppression by government. But the would be the same issue that, you know, a Latino guy, you know, down in L.A. is having and getting his film made. It's the same.
It's all relative, really.
Global right. language.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I love, too, it's like, you know, there's a trust, too, when you both have the credits or experience that you do. Susie, you're working on a documentary with NASA about Aurealis Borealis.
Aurora Borealis.
Damn it! I knew I was going to mess that up.
Just say Northern Lights.
I should have just
Northern
said Lights. I wanted to go for it.
Just say Northern Lights.
Just say Rockets.
And I saw your credits with, you know, 3,000 Miles to Graceland and the Clapton and Sting videos and stuff. So that's what I love about it already because I'm in the Recording Academy and there are people at the top of the Recording Academy that have no credits, and you're just like, "How? What?" There's a sense of mistrust in that organization sometimes,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, like our board, it consists of really successful and very well established.
That's everything.
Industries. Yeah, no, we've got merit.
That's and integrity. That's where it counts. That's
and
what I love.
What's great is each year it keeps growing. Yeah. Our relationships get bigger. And, you know, at the end of the day, everybody, it's kind of their responsibility, successful right. players in the industry. They have to provide support for the next generation, you know?
And is there like a membership? Like, let's say we have a film and it gets in and it, like, you know, it's accepted. Do we pay a membership or a kind of...
We're working on developing a more industry-focused and alumni-focused membership. Right now, it's just really accessible for the public. It's a general membership annual. I think it's super inexpensive. It's like $50, $100 a year.
That's awesome.
And you can get access to all the festivals and, you know, if there's, we have like open bar and red carpet, you know, it's very accessible.
So I have a, great. You know, not that I'm technically, you know, yeah, I'll say it.
you had Eddie on the edge of his seat right
one,
there.
One of the things that I've been talking a lot about in the board meetings and stuff is like, you know, at some point we're going to have to deal with that, like the Sundance Channel now exists, right?
Right, right.
That we have so much premium content that's coming to us all the time. And a lot of our content, you know, we have our breakout stars, people that came to us first, won with us, and all of a sudden have a major, you know, TV show or a major movie that's happening or something. That, of course,
happens.
There
are a lot of stories like that.
There's a lot of those stories.
Yeah.
But at the same token, we have this massive amount of amazing content, and I've talked about it continuously. You know, it's a capital-intensive conversation. There's no question, but mm-hmm. we could absolutely launch our own channel. And we could fill that channel with new premium content and content you have never seen before. Every time you came on, every day, there'd be something new you'd never seen before.
We have that much content. I mean, it's 11 years of shorts, documentaries, features, new
animation,
media, animation from all around
videos,
the world.
You know, all of it. So I think that that's going to be part one of the next evolutions. As a matter of fact, we are nonprofit, but I started talking about, well, how can we create something that is a profitable center that can support the nonprofit community?
Right.
And yes. I think that's the next part of yeah. our evolution and our growth is when New Filmmakers has its own channel, its own distribution arm. So not only do you come to us in the nonprofit and the festival side, but you have an avenue separate from whether it's HBO or Warner Brothers or Sony or somebody else coming
or
in.
Or Hulu.
Hulu, nice. Netflix,
nice plug there.
Hulu.
Hulu, John, you listening? New Filmmakers Channel.
Yeah. That's where I am clear at some fundamental level we're heading. And at some point also, some of us, including myself and others on the board and filmmakers, are going to have enough, I'm going to call it financial success in the world, to be able to give back even more than we already do. By the way, as board members, we don't get paid. We have to pay into the nonprofit to be on the board.
It's your job.
That's awesome.
Right. Literally, like it's pay to play in that world. And it's one of, speaking for myself, and I know on behalf of a number of the other board members or all of them, it's an honor and a privilege for us to do that because it's not only part of our give back, but it's also part of our ability to deal with what we're going through.
Right.
You know, and I'm not going to say, you know, the board meetings, unfortunately, are definitely not therapy. They are like hard budgets, work. Yeah. How do we support?
Well, it's like any corporation yeah. with board meetings.
Any real organization
that
has a vision, especially.
And that's critical, too, because there's real organization, real vision here, and an incredible commitment from Larry, our executive director, and everybody else on the board, and Susie, and so many others. It's New Filmmakers is about that passion and commitment that people have and to not only making a difference on the planet, but to also expressing their art.
Right.
Sharing their gift with the world, and then by the very nature of doing that, giving other people permission to share theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Man, hold on. Yeah. You should run for office, too. Let's do this.
That's
now,
what we
this may be
Larry.
A silly question, but with the community that you created, Are there a lot of collaborative opportunities between filmmakers? Do you see a lot of that?
There's such a great social component every month around the programs. And it's great to see just the crossover between the filmmakers and the talent and their community going over to the next program, the other filmmakers, our members that come there. I mean, it's constantly. I mean, that's what the organization
the
is
point.
About. It's
right.
fostering
yeah.
these type of opportunities within and outside as well.
Yeah, it's
fantastic.
A,
I was man, just, you got me sold.
It is,
having
I'm
a funny
telling you, it's
thought.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
It's the best
yeah,
thing.
I'm fired up. I'm like, man, this is crazy.
You know, it's I'm married with children, and
Eddie, you should stop getting on his lap then.
Yes.
just kidding.
But one of the only things that you know that there's never any question, like even tonight showing up for this show with my wife Brooke, is she's just like, you know, I say, honey, I've got a new filmmakers board meeting. She's like, okay, I understand. You know, or I'm going to go do a radio show. You were going to put the kid to bed tonight. I know, but I got to. Okay, I understand. Like, it's one of those. She knows that this is one of the things that feeds me.
Right.
That feeds me as an artist, that feeds me as a creative. And I can tell you right now, I am in discussions with executive producing a feature film by one of the people that I met through New Filmmakers.
No, you didn't tell me that.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
See? Look at what we're uncovering here.
You know, but those things are ongoing, you know, and so I'm there's always something extraordinary and creative that is happening that is also feeding what my creative needs are. As a filmmaker, as a writer, producer, director, game creator, et cetera.
Where can people find you online?
NFMLA.org, NFMLA.org, or newfilmmakerslosangeles.com, or they can find us on Facebook, Instagram.
All the same handles?
Yeah, at NFMLA.
Or show up to one
yeah,
of our monthly
downtown.
Events.
Anybody who's interested, I would strongly advise just sign up on our newsletter. We just send like every month highlights of the different events and, you know, programs that we're doing. That would be the best way. Show up, get engaged, meet people.
Yeah, make it happen.
A membership, you know, submit, participate in the competitions. Just show up.
Yeah. Become a star is what
yeah.
you're saying. That's what I hear.
Just be
become
there.
A star. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think that's a critical thing she just said, and you know, I think that's been said in a lot of industries. You know, the perfect example with the band. It's like showing up's 90% of the gig.
Right. Right.
You know, it really is.
So, it's that consistency of just showing up night after night after night.
And it goes back to the ongoing availability
right.
every month, the consistency that we built up. I mean, it does a lot. There's so much beautiful impact that happens to, you know, just the community and, you know, the different artists that come through. It's always there. You
right.
can count on it, you know?
I it's love
reliable.
That you've created this voice. This is unbelievable.
You know, the voice is created... well, first, again, I just as a board member, I gotta go. You know, can't. You know, how do you? Where's the applause? The staff.
Yeah, do it. Do it.
The staff. The staff. Okay. But separate.
That was a triple.
From, thank you. But separate from that, it's the filmmakers are demanding the community.
Right.
As much as the staff and the executive team and the board are there, mostly we're just providing the container in which they get to show up and be, you know, the miracle makers they are.
Fantastic. New filmmakers of Los Angeles, Susie Kim, Damian Lichtenstein. Did I say it right?
Yeah,
yes.
That was really nice.
Boom.
I like
Aurora Borealis. Mm. Boom. Hit
you're
it out
over.
Of the park.
You're all over.
Eddie Pence,
Mr.
age 44. Yes. Well, you guys were amazing guests. You're going to have
you.
To come back. I want to know more about this organization.
When we're
more
doing
about festivals.
The channel
yes.
With maybe Hulu.
That's right. Hulu. John, you listening? There we go. Well, on behalf of Eddie Pence and myself, We'll see you guys next week. Check out New Filmmakers of Los Angeles. All right.